This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. In Syria, health officials say a deadly drone strike hit a packed graduation ceremony for young military officers. We get more on the story from AP correspondent Jennifer King.
The city health director for Homs, Syria, says more than five dozen civilian and military personnel were killed and three times as many injured in one of the deadliest attacks on the Syrian army in recent years. Multiple hospitals were receiving patients. Syria's military blamed insurgents for the drones laden with explosives that targeted military graduates and their families at the end of a crowded ceremony. This young man's brother was graduating. He says they were taking pictures when he felt fire in his face and everything was ripped apart. Following the attack, government forces shelled villages in the rebel-held northwest. The Syrian government announced a three-day state of mourning starting on Friday. I'm Jennifer King.
European Union Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell declared Thursday that a strike that killed at least 51 people gathered in eastern Ukraine had brought Russian atrocities to yet another grim level.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned European leaders on Thursday that Russia could attack other countries if the continent wavered in its support for Kiev. He said if Russia had the chance to rebuild its military capabilities, it could widen the war within 5 years. Zelensky gave an emotive speech at the summit of the European political community in Granada, Spain.
We have to win in Ukraine so that Putin cannot scale this aggression to someone else. And it is realistic.
Zelensky added that he was still confident of continued U.S. and European financial aid despite political storms in Washington and elsewhere.
As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Nigeria's main opposition says it will present new evidence to support its court challenge seeking to overturn this year's presidential election. First runner-up Atiku Abubakar and his lawyer alleged Thursday that President Bola Tinubu forged a diploma from an American university. A spokesman for Tinubu has denied the allegation. U.S. President Joe Biden is defending his administration's move to use Trump-era funds for building roughly 20 more miles of wall along the southern border. Get more on that story from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
The Biden administration waived 26 federal laws in South Texas to allow the construction with funds approved in 2019, before he became president.
They have to use money for what it was appropriate. I can't stop that.
The president says he asked Congress to redirect the money.
They didn't. They wouldn't.
Asked if he thinks walls work.
No.
Still waiving federal laws for wall construction is raising questions because the president condemned wall spending while campaigning. Mexico's president calls the Biden move to allow wall construction a setback. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The Biden administration said it will resume the deportation of migrants back to Venezuela in hopes of decreasing the numbers of Venezuelans arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border. This is the latest effort by the administration to stem the flood of Venezuelans making the dangerous journey from through Darien Gap, Central America, and Mexico to the southern U.S. border. The U.N. reports that a staggering 7 million Venezuelans have left their country due to political instability, and they travel through countries including Peru and Colombia to get to the United States. Sources tell the Associated Press former President Donald Trump is in talks to visit Capitol Hill next week. We get more from the AP's Ed Donahue.
With Kevin McCarthy out, Republicans in the House are looking for a new leader.
A lot of people have been calling me about Speaker.
Some on the far right have floated the former president as a potential candidate for Speaker, perhaps on an interim basis. He was asked about it during a court appearance in New York.
I'm running for president. I'm up by 40 and 50 points and more in some cases. But whatever I can do to help with regard to Speaker is good.
There is no requirement a person be a member of the House to serve as Speaker, but every one of the 55 speakers elected has been a member of the House. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, October 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Journalists assaulted in Uganda as opposition leader returns from the United States.
We've continued to find this year that the state is attacking journalists, activists, and even ordinary citizens, particularly anybody who dares to discuss issues that the authorities may deem either sensitive or to be critical of their positions.
The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan accuses the government of suppressing the opposition, restricting media freedom, and interfering with civil society.
He may have introduced some policy reforms, which for me are mostly economic driven. But the issue remains that reforms or development are not only about the economy. There are political issues that could help the economic issues to work very well.
And the World Bank says economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa is expected to decline by more than a percentage point this year due to slumps in economic powerhouses, South Africa, Nigeria, and Angola. Those stories, plus Samson Omale's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More than a dozen Ugandan journalists were reportedly assaulted and their equipment vandalized Thursday by security agents deployed to control anti-government protests called by the leader of Uganda's opposition National Unity Platform Party. As Halima Atman reports from the capital Kampala, police say the journalists were disrupting the operations.
It all started with the arrival of National Unity Platform leader Robert Kyagulanyi at the Entebbe International Airport. Kyagulanyi, who goes by the stage name Bobby Wine, narrated his ordeal to journalists.
As soon as I landed, goons grabbed me and dragged me, twisted my hands, and bundled me into a waiting private car. They drove me to the old airport where they pulled me out and then put me in a military car with many soldiers and police officers. It was very humiliating. It was very uncomfortable, but I'm glad I reached here.
Several security checkpoints were mounted along roads leading to the airport and to Wine's home, where the politician told reporters he has been placed under house arrest. Before his return from a foreign trip, Wine had called on Ugandans to join him in what the NUP called the 1 Million March. Journalists were not allowed at the airport, and those who were stopped by security were taken to the Entebbe Central Police Station, where they were held for close to 4 hours. Jengo Eria is a videographer working for a local television station.
Then the SFC guys and the military guys just came and started pulling our reporters. They pulled me out of the car, actually through the window, even without asking me anything. I was beaten. My camera was destroyed. My phone, I have wounds at my back, the arm. I get bruises everywhere.
Robert Simpala, the national coordinator of the Human Rights Network for Journalists Uganda, says his group had engaged security on the safety of journalists covering the event.
The charges remain extremely unclear and their gadgets have not been returned to them. They're saying they're going to first have to look into the content that was on those gadgets, which is another violation. It's very unfortunate that the military hooded and these guys in masks were at the helm of these operations.
Sempala says the special forces usurped police powers and took charge of public order. However, Special Forces Command spokesperson Jimmy O'Mara told VOA he was not aware of any such event happening.
But what I'm sure about is that that was a police-led operation. Do they have any of our soldiers in uniform, in our attire at SFC? Because even me, I was watching from the screen. What I could only see was the police uniform.
In a statement, the police say the 14 journalists were arrested due to challenges in identification from the crowd and were briefly taken to the Entebbe police holding cells. The police acknowledge that some journalists may have been subjected to physical harm and are committed to identifying them and conducting a thorough investigation. Before his departure to the United States, Wine was on a countrywide tour that was stopped by the police, who said he could be a target for terrorists. It is not clear if Wine will resume the tour that attracted thousands on the streets. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
The United Nations Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan is accusing the government of suppressing opposition voices, restricting media freedom, and interfering with civil society. The commission says these violations weaken the country's accountability and democratic process. The commission blamed South Sudan's intelligence agency for violating human rights and meddling in people's lives, employing tactics reminiscent of the methods used by Sudan's security agencies against the South prior to its secession. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The United Nations Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan released a new report Thursday titled Entrenched Repression, which looks at the systemic restriction of democratic and civic space in South Sudan. The UN Human Rights Board accused South Sudanese security agencies and government officials of human rights abuses, torture, repression, rendition and interference in the work of media, civil society and political groups. UN Commissioner Bani Afako, speaking to reporters in Nairobi, said that these abuses affect the population indiscriminately, regardless of their societal position.
We've continued to find this year that the state is attacking journalists, activists, and even ordinary citizens, particularly anybody who dares to discuss issues that the authorities may deem either sensitive or to be critical of their positions. Reprisals include intimidation, harassment, violence, beatings, sexual violence against women, arbitrary detentions, and torture.
The report highlights the ongoing and unchecked attacks against journalists and human rights defenders, both within and outside South Sudan, including online harassment. According to the report, the intelligence agency exercises censorship within newsrooms by placing agents there to review content before publication or broadcast. Publications based outside the country are also subjected to website blockages and cyber attacks. The research findings reveal that politicians, opposition groups, and freedom of association have been abused, making it challenging for people to voice their opinions on the country's political and socioeconomic situation. South Sudanese authorities are also accused of forcibly transferring their critics from African nations, resulting in disappearances and suspected killings. Maurice Mabior, a critic of the South Sudan government, was abducted from Kenya in February and reportedly taken to Juba, where he endured torture and mistreatment. Attempts to reach South Sudan's Minister of Information, Michael McQuay, to respond to the allegations were unsuccessful. Investigators blame the abuses on the South Sudan National Security Service. Commissioner Afako knows the intelligence agency is employing tactics similar to those used by neighboring Sudan to suppress and limit people's freedom.
Now, the primary instrument of repression in South Sudan is the National Security Service. And we found that many of the tactics that they use mirror those that were used by the regime in Khartoum when the country was still part of Sudan. For example, South Sudanese still use the term ghost houses to refer to the clandestine detention facilities, which are notorious for torture and enforced disappearances. This is the same term, and this is a practice that was used in Sudan when the South and the North were still one country.
South Sudan gained independence from its neighbour in 2011. The 57-page report is released as the South Sudan transitional period is about to end, with planned elections in December 2024. South Sudan descended into tribal conflict after forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar engaged in a gun battle in December 2013. The conflicts have killed at least 400,000 and displaced millions. A 2018 peace agreement involving the government, opposition groups and rebel members brought some normalcy and required the warring parties to have a roadmap for a transition to democracy. As the push for elections gained momentum, human rights researchers are concerned that those in power may engage in abuses to solidify their positions. UN Commissioner Carlos Fernandez said the country needs a strong judiciary as part of conflict resolution mechanisms.
So the lack of an independent, reliable, transparent judiciary is another factor that brings a general situation of legal uncertainty, and the rule of law is just based in this kind of referee for the game. So we need to play the game, but we need clear rules to play, and we need a referee to play, because if not, the citizens that cannot ask for the protection of the judiciary will resort to corruption or maybe eventually to violence.
The UN panel of investigators urges the government to finalize the constitution-making process and conduct national elections. They also demand that authorities cease the harassment of journalists, human rights activists, members of civil society and the public. The commission is also calling for the prosecution of officials, security personnel and others involved in such violations to put an end to the prevailing culture of impunity. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Bank says economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa is expected to decline by more than a percentage point this year due to slumps in economic powerhouses, South Africa, Nigeria and Angola. The World Bank said crippling debt costs and a recent spate of coups in the region also play a role. Timothy Abiezo reports from Abuja.
The World Bank released its projections in its latest edition of its semi-annual outlook for the region. The bank projects economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa will decline this year to 2.5% from 3.6% in 2022. The report blames the decline on poor economic growth in the region's powerhouses, including Nigeria, South Africa, and Angola. The report, released Wednesday, also said crippling debt, rising instability in the region due to a wave of coups, climate change, and a declining or uncertain global economy are contributors. Economist Ndungu Kolo from the development company NextEar agreed and says African leaders need to look beyond amending economic policies alone.
Yes, I believe what the World Bank is predicting. We could see that Nigerian economy has nearly crippled, if not crashed, based on a lot of issues in the country, from insecurity to issues of governance, you know. And then the neighborhood effects, you know, around Nigeria as well, in this sense, I'm looking at insecurity in some of the countries in the Sahel and the military rule in most of those countries.
The World Bank says Africa's poorest and most vulnerable people will be the hardest hit by this year's economic slowdown. Nigeria's oil-dependent economy has been declining for years despite efforts by authorities and a recent increase in global oil prices, while South Africa is battling the most severe energy crisis in its history. But the World Bank report also says that increased violence and conflict in the region is affecting progress. Nigeria has been battling armed gangs for many years, while countries like Sudan have been embroiled in internal armed conflict, crippling economic activities. The report predicts Sudan's economy will contract 12%. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu embarked in May on policy reforms aimed at boosting the economy. But Nwokolo says African leaders must look beyond economic reforms alone to solve developmental problems.
He may have introduced some policy reforms, which for me are mostly economic driven. But the issue remains that reforms or development are not only about the economy. There are political issues that could help the economic issues to work very well. There are social issues that will help economic issues for you to achieve results. So development is holistic.
Chris Kwaja, a senior researcher at the Center for Peace and Security Studies, agrees instability could harm Africa's economy, but is skeptical about the report, taking into account the role of Africa's informal sectors.
Instability creates vulnerability. Vulnerability also creates conditions where these individuals are not able to pursue their economic agendas that contribute to the growth of the economy. Unfortunately, when some of these reports are written, they ignore the role that the informal sector plays in African economy. The cross-border trades that take place across border African borders is often not captured. And that has been one of the key safety nets for African economies.
Kwaja says African nations must boost intra-African trade and fight corruption to grow their economies.
We need to put in place sustainable Marshall plans for development that places the people at the center, the middle, and the end point of development. African economies are agrarian in nature, and they are highly dependent on small-level credit facilities. And the second is to strengthen our institutions for accountability. The fight against corruption should be one that all African countries are committed to.
Between 2030 and 2050, sub-Saharan Africa is expected to account for 90% of the growth in the working population. The World Bank says sub-Saharan Africa needs to create 10 million jobs each year to fix the problem. At the moment, the region can only generate 3 million jobs a year. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mpoga in Washington. Zimbabwean author T.C. Dangaremba received the African Freedom Prize in Johannesburg on Thursday, where she spoke about literature and politics in her home country. Kate Bartlett asked the literary star about recent contentious elections in Zimbabwe and about writing dissent.
Tsitsi Dangaremba has long been one of Zimbabwe's most highly regarded and beloved fiction writers. From her lauded first novel, Nervous Conditions, in 1988, to This Mournable Body, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2020. Tinashe Mushakavanu, a research fellow at the University of Oxford who specializes in Zimbabwean literature, says Dangaremba has a place in the modern canon.
Her most important contribution is being the first black Zimbabwean woman writer to publish a novel in English. In that sense, she is a pioneer and a leading light, so much that her book, Nervous Conditions, is considered one of the best African books of the 20th century.
That's one of the reasons the Friedrich Naumann Foundation for Freedom, which promotes liberal politics and democracy around the world, is awarding Dangaremba their greatest honor today. She is also the recipient of the 2021 Penn International Award for Freedom of Expression. Aside from her writing, Dangaremba has made headlines for her political activism. The 64-year-old was convicted by a Zimbabwean court last year of inciting violence after staging a peaceful protest with a friend, during which the two women stood quietly on a roadside holding placards calling for political reform. That conviction was overturned earlier this year by a higher court. So would Dangaremba consider herself a political writer?
Conceive of myself as a political writer. I don't conceive of myself as an activist writer. I conceive of myself as a person who has a story to tell, and my story has an intention. My intention is to tell stories in which Zimbabweans can see themselves reflected. And I think that is important for the well-being of the individual, to understand the complexities of the lives they are living and the challenges, and to possibly point to possible solutions. And I think that when individuals are able to engage in that process, it leads to the health of the nation.
After independence in 1980, the former British colony was ruled by one man, Robert Mugabe, for almost four decades until he was overthrown in a bloodless coup in 2017. His successor from the same party, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, has failed to fix the country's broken economy and has cracked down on dissent. The political opposition called the last elections, held in August, a fraud, and the Southern African Development Community, which sent a mission to observe polls, expressed concerns over the fairness of the vote. Among the previous winners of the Africa Freedom Prize are Nigerian novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Denai Mupatsa, a senior lecturer in African literature at Johannesburg's Witwatersrand University, notes that female writers from the continent have been receiving more attention and accolades lately.
There's definitely a particular kind of momentum for African writers and African women writers, I think, in particular the last 10 years.
Asked about this, Dangaremba said what it indicates is that the publishing world has shifted to open up and is publishing more work by African women writers. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sports with basketball. Nigeria men's basketball team, the Tigers, beat Team USA 75 to 70 points in their first game of the ongoing friendly tournament in China. It is the second time the Nigerian men's team have emerged victorious over the Americans, having stunned them 90 to 87 points in the pre-2020 Olympics exhibition game in Las Vegas in 2021. Staying with basketball news, the qualifying campaign for the fourth edition of the Basketball African League opens on Friday, October 6th, with the first round of the Road to Bal campaign and concludes in early November with the Elite 16. A total of 19 clubs from all corners of the African continent are registered in the first round of the Road to Bal and will do battle across four cities to determine who makes it to the defining Elite 16 round. The Bal qualifier consists of East and West divisions with teams split into groups A, B, C, D, and E. The two best placed teams from group A and B from the West will advance to the Elite 16, while the winners of group C, D, and E in the East division will qualify automatically to the next round. In athletics, Chiefs do mission for the Accra 2023 African Games, representing 19 nations, have toured the facilities at the University of Ghana and the Legon and Boetman sites ahead of next year's postponed event. The Chiefs do mission began their tour at the University of Ghana site, which will host athletics and rugby sevens, conducted by Kwaku Ofosu Asare, the executive chairman for the local organizing committee. The Boetman Sports Complex is due to host 10 sports: aquatics, handball, judo, karate, taekwondo, badminton, boxing, volleyball, and weightlifting. During the tour, the visitors were able to speak to the contractors on their expectations of the facilities when they returned to the shores of the West African country for the games in March 2024. The chosen mission came from Angola, Benin, Botswana, Burkina Faso, Burundi, Chad, Cameroon, Comoros, the Ivory Coast, Djibouti, Eritrea, Eswatini, Gabon, Gambia, Kenya, Liberia, Malawi, Mauritania, Namibia, Nigeria, and Seychelles. Representatives from South Africa, Somalia, South Sudan, Togo, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zambia were also present. In volleyball news, Rwanda will host the second edition of the African Volleyball Confederation Zone 5 Volleyball Club Championships from November the 6th to the 13th. A letter sent by the Confederation Zone 5 to volleyball associations indicates that the games include men's and women's games. The tournament is said to be staged at the BK Arena in Kigali and is expected to attract over 30 teams from around the region. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thanks, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. And for more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Mpuga in Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday morning.
Every week, VOA's Issues in the News discusses the biggest stories in detail. Our in-depth analysis goes beyond the headlines with the inside story on U.S. and international news. Issues in the News, every weekend on The Voice of America.